As pitchers and catchers prepare to report for spring training, baseball is still abuzz with news of the blockbuster trade of Alex Rodriguez to the New York Yankees. But there is a developing story that could eclipse whatever happens on the field this year. Some of the best-known stars of Major League Baseball could find themselves in court testifying about their use of illegal drugs, steroids, to improve their performance. And it's not just baseball. Professional football and top track and field athletes are said to be involved as well. The controversy centers around a California company called Balco. Last week, Victor Conti, the head of the company, and three other men were indicted by a federal grand jury. Yesterday, the U.S. Attorney's Office released affidavits given by Conti and by Greg Anderson, the personal trainer for San Francisco Giants star Barry Bonds, who said that he, Anderson, had given steroids to pro baseball players. Today's New York Times and other newspapers reported that the name of Yankees outfielder Gary Sheffield was left in the affidavit by accident. Neither Bonds nor Sheffield has been accused of using steroids, and no players have been indicted. The case raises serious questions for professional and amateur athletics, for fans, and for the many non-athletes who use steroids. We'll find out more about what they are, how they're used, how they're regulated, and the implications of the Balco case. If you use steroids, if you know somebody who has, or if you're concerned about the integrity of sports, or what some might call the hypocrisy of sports, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest is NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman, who joins us from his office in Portland, Oregon. Always good to have you on the program, Tom.
Hi, Neil. Good to be here.
Remind us of the timeline of this Balco inquiry. When did this first come to light?
We'll give you the bullet points on it. The investigation began about a year and a half ago. A grand jury in San Francisco, a federal grand jury, started taking secret testimony from several dozen elite athletes in many different sports. That happened late last year. And then, as you mentioned, last Thursday, none other than U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft, it made quite a splash, announced this 42-count federal indictment against, as you said, Victor Conti. The indictment was also against James Valente, who's the vice president of Balco, Greg Anderson, as you mentioned, who's a personal trainer for professional athletes, most notably Barry Bonds, and a world-renowned track coach, Remy Korchemny.
And what do the affidavits that were released yesterday tell us about the activities of Greg Anderson and Victor Conti?
The affidavits include admissions from three of the defendants that they were involved in the distribution of illegal performance-enhancing drugs. Victor Conti told agents, according to the affidavit, that he gave Greg Anderson steroids to give to professional baseball players, and I'm quoting now. Conti said he knew this was illegal and assumed Anderson knew it was illegal as well. Valente basically corroborated the stuff that Conti said, and Valente also said that Anderson paid Balco for the steroids he illegally distributed to baseball players. And then, of course, Greg Anderson, in one of the affidavits, admits he gave steroids to several professional baseball players. So, you know, some fairly damning stuff. And I should say that all of this, you know, everyone's wondering, well, what about Barry Bonds? This puts Barry Bonds in the bullseye. His personal trainer indicted for steroid distribution. You look at Bonds' increasingly muscular physique in the last several years. His prodigious home run hitting makes people suspicious, and his attorney responded to the affidavits by saying, and I quote, "There's probably stuff I know that hasn't been disclosed that leads me to say that I still do not believe there is any evidence in possession of the feds to indicate steroid use by Barry Bonds. There may be speculative and circumstantial evidence, but I don't think there's evidence at all." That's his attorney, Michael Raines.
Well, let's point out, we mentioned steroids are illegal drugs. They're illegal unless you have a doctor's prescription. Mr. Conti and Mr. Anderson, none of these people involved are doctors.
No, they're not. Victor Conti, who founded Balco, has no medical background. His major background is as a musician. He played with the Tower of Power, for anyone old enough to remember that funk band out of the Bay Area. He made a transition from music to the health nutritional industry in about 1980 or so, and that kind of, he's according to people who know him and work with him, he is a brilliant man with a photographic memory, and so he was able to digest all of the science that he then kind of gave out and charged for in legal ways by creating supplements and doing blood and urine testing for athletes at the Balco labs over many years.
And the testing he did was to identify areas, you know, kinds of materials that, that might help that athlete improve their performance. There are, of course, other kinds of tests that are done even in Major League Baseball, which has a fairly recent steroid testing policy, to detect these drugs to make sure that they don't enhance the performance of athletes in various kinds of sports. And one of the truly disturbing things about this case is that the principal steroid involved was a substance that's come to be known as THD, which seems to have been specifically designed to avoid detection.
Yes, and that gets us to the whole cat and mouse game of scientists or a scientist out there devising these things. People I've talked to said it's not too difficult to do, but yes, there are people out there who are trying to outrun the testers, and with THG, they seem to have succeeded for a while until Don Catlin at the Olympic Analytic Lab down in L.A. discovered a test for it. Nine prominent athletes have tested positive for THG, but you know, when the test came out and all the news came out of this late last year, many people said that the people devising these substances were on to the next one. Mm-hmm. So we can probably assume that there are people out there creating these things right now.
But it does make you suspicious. Again, no athletes have yet been indicted or specifically charged with steroid use in this most recent example. But there's been so many ball players who said, you know, hey, I'm clean. If you don't think I'm clean, go ahead and do the test, perhaps knowing that the substance they may have been using was undetectable.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, spring training is beginning now, and there is a tremendous cloud of suspicion, of course. You talked about the buzz about A-Rod, the mm-hmm. trade for A-Rod. This is the ultimate buzz kill, because this story is going to linger through spring training into the season. And perhaps it's going to be more than suspicion. And I say that because perhaps there will be the emergence of names of players who have tested positive for steroids. This grand jury has been looking into Balco has subpoenaed the test results from the first ever round of steroid testing in Major League Baseball from last year, when 5 to 7% of players tested positive. They have subpoenaed that. There is the risk that names would come out. The players' union is fighting this tooth and nail, because when the union grudgingly agreed to steroid testing and put it in the collective bargaining agreement last time, it ensured confidentiality, so players wouldn't be named. Now this subpoena threatens to kind of blow that out of the water. We may be, if the union is unsuccessful in quashing this subpoena, we may actually have some names of people who tested positive for steroids.
Grand jury testimony is secret, of course, but we know who testified before the grand jury. They include Barry Bonds and Jason Giambi of the New York Yankees as well, and many other prominent names. And according to an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, sources told those reporters that after being given immunity in the grand jury proceedings, those players are, I don't know if those players specifically, but players then went ahead and named names.
Yes, and they were and the names, as you say, are not included in the indictment. Since the indictments on Thursday, everyone's been going, you know, where are the names? For this case to make a really big splash, they want to know. The athletes were, who testified, almost, 30 or a little more than 30 athletes, they were offered limited immunity for their testimony, but they could reportedly be charged with perjury if prosecutors think that they lied about drug use. And another way we may hear about athletes, Olympic athletes, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency has in its rules, it allows that agency to sanction Olympic athletes even if they don't test positive. If they admit to doping, then they could be sanctioned. So there may be a lot more to come.
Our number is 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. Let's get a question from Paul, who's with us from Albany, California.
Hi, good morning. I have a couple of questions. One is, in England, just a few weeks ago, you had a player who actually plays on the English national soccer team who got an 8-month ban simply because he didn't show up to take his test on the day required. That's the first thing. The second thing,
Rio Ferdinand, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the second thing is, it's just total hypocrisy. We live in California where we have 3 strikes and you're out. In other words, you know, you steal a bag of groceries and you go to jail for life. And these guys get 5 strikes before they're out. And I'm really sick of it. I think it's pathetic. And I think it's time to not only eliminate all the mollycoddling of these athletes, but it's also time to eliminate the whole idea that these people are not subject in baseball to antitrust law.
Paul, thanks very much for your questions. Tom?
Well, he raises a really good point, and for years now, since the doping, since doping got back on the radar screen, really in 1998 with the Tour de France scandal, international anti-doping crusaders have railed against the United States just for the reason that the caller says, particularly with our professional leagues, who have been, many say, rather slothful in going after drug cheats, and in fact, you know, with baseball. Baseball did institute its first ever steroid testing last year, but many say it's laughable for players to get a one-year ban. They have to test positive five times. In Olympic sports, which test year-round randomly and unannounced tests, a steroid doping offense carries a minimum two-year ban, first one. So, yes, there are inequities, and but those may be changing now as the public becomes more aware of this, and as certainly baseball, the heat is on baseball. Question is, will they feel enough heat to make significant changes? And a lot of that depends on fans. You know, if fans keep paying their money, where's the incentive to change?
And as Tom mentioned earlier, the another hurdle is the Players Association, the Baseball Players Union, which has always insisted that random testing would be an invasion of privacy. Tom Goldman, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman with us from his office in Portland, Oregon. Joining us now is John Hoberman, who's a professor at the University of Texas in Austin and an expert on doping. His upcoming book is Testosterone Dreams, Rejuvenation, Aphrodisia, and Doping. He joins us from the studios of member station KUT in Austin. It's good of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon.
And though the Balco case centers around a specific steroid called THG, it's just one member of a very large family. Remind us, if you would, steroids, what are they, and have they always been illegal?
Anabolic steroids are synthetic versions of the basic testosterone molecule that occurs in nature. It was a molecule that was first isolated in the lab in 1935. The anabolic steroid derivatives go on the market and into clinical medical use in the late 30s. And they've been there leading often a hidden life in clinical medicine without the notoriety we attach to the athletic doping that has employed many anabolic steroids. They've been there. They are still in clinical use. There is legitimate research done and published in peer referee journals on the uses of these drugs, but the larger point is that the history of these so-called androgenic drugs based upon the male hormone, if you will, testosterone, these drugs have been leading to double parallel lives. The legitimate careers of these drugs in clinical medicine for almost 70 years, and then beginning in the 1950s and slowly spreading and then quickly spreading through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, what modern societies define as the illegitimate use of these drugs to boost athletic performance. And the bodybuilders, of course, are a very large and steroid consumption intensive subpopulation that has been driving the underground market for androgenic drugs to a much greater extent than the athletic market for many years now.
We're going to be talking more about the connection between steroids and sports and taking more of your calls when we come back from a short break. If you'd like to join us again, the number is 800-989-8255, or you can send us email totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about steroids and sports, not just the Balco scandal, which is still developing, but the wider use of different kinds of steroids and other kinds of supplements throughout sports, and increasingly by non-athletes as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is John Hoberman, a professor at UT Austin, who's an expert on doping. doping. His forthcoming book is Testosterone Dreams, Rejuvenation, Aphrodisia, Doping. And let's get a caller on the line. And Kelly is with us from Sacramento, California.
Hi. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. Early in my sports career, I used steroids of many types, and definitely support the premise that it was an underground counterculture that supplied those drugs. However, today, you know, the landscape has changed dramatically. And what I see as an aging athlete, so to speak, you know, the baby boomer generation, I'm nursing injuries that are lifetime injuries and nagging injuries. And it's readily available in the market today. And I think to categorize these drugs as illegal is really a misnomer because of the amount of places that these drugs are available. And really, if you look at the way they're being marketed today through drug companies and through doctors themselves, is through these rejuvenation spas as youth-enhancing drugs and anti-aging drugs. And in fact, you know, I've undergone a number of therapies with not only the testosterone type of drugs, but also human growth hormone. And, I'd like to hear your comments on, you know, your impressions of how the drugs are being marketed today, and really, behind the scenes, what that economic engine is that drives it. Because I think, you know, we focus just on the professional athletes, but if you really look at the overall picture, these drugs are readily available to the general public, not only professional athletes.
Got it, John. Got it, Kelly. John Hoberman?
Excellent point. There, as the caller points out, the status of androgenic drugs, certainly in the 1990s, I think is the key period, has changed dramatically. I did not say these drugs were illegal except where societies define them to be being used illicitly, namely in the boosting of athletic performance. What the caller left out, I believe, was that these drugs are readily available, as it were, to people who get legal prescriptions from people with MDs. He is absolutely right. The legal prescription, quantitatively speaking, has gone up 500% in the last 10 years. In other words, what, a fivefold increase in the so-called legitimate use of testosterone for the purposes of anti-aging is a common selling point. You see any number of cosmetic surgery practitioners. In fact, I attended a lecture by one a few years ago who are going into the anti-aging business. They've got their prescription pads. They don't have long-term research to predict the effects upon their patients, but they have the legal right to prescribe human growth hormone, to prescribe testosterone or anabolic steroids to any so-called aging person who they think has a need for the drug. And of course, this is off-label prescribing that has a very wide purview as prescription habits in our society go. So once again, you see a very contradictory situation developing over the past 10 or 15 years. Ben Johnson scandal occurs in 1988. That's
the Canadian sprinter at the Olympics.
The Canadian sprinter at the Seoul Olympic Games of that year. The anabolic steroid takes on this global notoriety during this period. But at the same time, as the caller notes, what society defines, what the law defines, what the Food and Drug Administration defines as the legitimate use of androgenic drugs for so-called therapeutic purposes, therapy being widely rather flexibly defined, is going on. It is booming. And he's absolutely right about the sort of drug company advertising we are seeing these days. The direct-to-consumer advertising, I believe, was legalized in 1997. And on primetime American television these days, if you're interested in what the pharmaceutical industry is up to, there are wonders to behold about antidepressants being described for all sorts of things, the apparent invention of various syndromes that Paxil or Prozac or whatever antidepressant might be good for. One historical point. In the early 40s, pharmaceutical companies in this country tried to make synthetic testosterone. And the anabolic steroids of that day, the propionate and the methyl testosterone variants, everyday drugs. The term male climacteric appears in a medical journal in 1939, and the rush is on to try to sell these drugs through American physicians, through the advertising in the Journal of the American Medical Association, etc. It didn't work. American society was simply too conservative, too repressed, too sexually conservative, in my opinion, to allow such a thing as mass testosterone therapy for aging males, potentially for women with so-called sexual dysfunction problems. Society wasn't ready for it. After the 60s, 70s, 80s, and the 90s, in a society that is wealthy, in which the fulfillment of individual self-realization is now a very primary cultural value, what I call libertarian pharmacology, the idea that consenting adults have the right to put into their bodies whatever substances make them feel good or make them feel younger, make them feel more healthy. This is a very powerful wave onto which the pharmaceutical industry has climbed. And in that sense, it is a wild world out there. In my opinion, the medical profession is losing control of the use of these drugs as increasing numbers of physicians flock to the cosmetic medicine branch that was once held, as a matter of fact, a generation or two ago, in contempt by many doctors. Economic incentives are now changing that to a considerable degree, and that is why we see this flourishing of advertising of the anti-aging clinics that the caller so properly referred to. I went to the theater the other night. I opened the theater program in Austin, Texas, and there, right there, are three or four ads from rejuvenation, cosmetic medicine clinics of one kind or another, at least one of which was pushing hormones.
Yeah. Joining us now is William Llewellyn. He's head of research and development, as well as the CEO of a company called Molecular Nutrition, a sports supplement company. His most recent book is Anabolics 2004, a reference books, a book on anabolic steroids, and he joins us from Jupiter, Florida. Good of you to be with us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Do you think steroids should be legal in sports?
Well, I think there's two very separate issues going on here that we all need to recognize. There's the ethics of cheating, and there's the criminality of the possession of these drugs. And, you know, that I think is really the big issue now that we're getting all confused. You know, certainly sports organizations are free organizations. They should, you know, ban drugs and test as they see fit. But, you know, we're kind of taking that a big step further and saying, wait a minute, let's criminalize these drugs. Let's, you know, let's get rid of cheating by locking people up that use the tools of cheating. And I think a lot of people are suffering. A lot of people are getting locked up and put in jail for just trying to improve their physiques and improve their bodies. And that's, I think, the unfortunate situation right now.
Unless they're taking these things under a doctor's direction, a lot of people say they're endangering their health.
You know, certainly, anabolic steroids, like all prescription drugs, there are side effects associated with their use. There are certain concerns. I mean, I'm not an advocate of steroids being sold over the counter and everybody having free access to them. But, you know, at the same time, I used steroids for a decade. I've been around them. I'm still around athletes who use steroids all the time. And I got to be honest with you, you know, when you're in the community, you're hard-pressed to find the horror stories that the media portrays with steroid use. Yes, there are some concerns. There's, you know, cholesterol alterations. There's, you know, occasional blood pressure if you don't watch the medications you're using. There's liver toxicity if you don't watch the medications you're using. But, you know, it's way blown out of proportion. Yes, these side effects exist, but they're a very small percentage of occurrences as far as people using them. And most people that use anabolic steroids, they use them for years without having any significant health effects. And, you know, that's the big issue, that we're scaring people in the media, saying these are the super deadly drugs and they have no, you know, legitimate use. And at the same time, the, you know, the young guys that are getting into the gyms and into the steroid use, they see it from a totally different perspective. They don't see people going to the hospital. They don't see people dropping dead from steroid use. So, you know, there's a big dichotomy in terms of how, you know, how steroids are perceived in the general public and in the sports communities.
Let's get another caller on the line. Sincheska joins us from Red Bluff, California.
Yes. Hello. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I had a comment, and I had a couple of questions just to kind of clear something up for me. Well, my comment is that I have a friend. Actually, he's a friend now. He was an ex-boyfriend, and this is the reason why we are no longer together. He started taking steroids about a year ago, and he started getting into going to the gym, and he goes once or twice a day now to the gym. And I found out about, 6 or 7 months ago that he had been taking these steroids injections in his leg, and he would alternate the usage and the dosage of these to enhance his muscle building and things like that. And it got to a point where I started to notice within the last 7 months that he had really started to change. And the change was rapid. He'd go through...
His personality rather than his body, you're talking about.
Right. It was more his personality than it was his body. It was very rapid. He'd go from one extreme in his personality to another. And it was like he didn't notice it. He didn't know it. And he thought that if he would alternate these drugs and go off of one and onto another, and then completely quit one and then go back to it a few months later, that he would be okay. And it didn't make any difference what he was doing or how he was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The mood swings were still as severe. And he has just strictly been using these for muscle enhancing, bodybuilding. And
yeah, well, let's get a response from William Llewellyn, as Sincheska is not alone in this kind of story.
You do see that to some extent. Male aggression is linked to steroid hormones. When people abuse steroids and take very high levels, sometimes they tend to notice increased aggression. Some go so far to use that as an excuse to be violent, belligerent, and mean to others.
So-called roid rage. Yeah,
the roid rage thing. I mean, that is certainly overblown. I mean, yes, to some extent, the average person that takes steroids might notice, get a little bit, short of temper if they're cut off from driving or a little bit more aggravated at times. But the extreme of the roid rage and the fighting and the violence is just that. It's an extreme. It's a small percentage of users. And I think in a lot of regards that steroids are looked as an excuse for that kind of behavior when a lot of times it's also the person that's acting like that. I certainly was not the kind of person when I took steroids to go, pick a fight with somebody in traffic or beat my girlfriend or wife or something. And
well, let's get a response to John Hoberman. Are steroids bad for you? Do they induce the kind of personality change that Sincheska is talking about?
I think it depends on the individual. There are some people who, according to the medical literature that exists on this, in whom aggressiveness is going to be promoted by the use of steroids. I remember a Norwegian sports official once described this to me as, quote, the shot putter who threw his girlfriend through a window. As Mr. Llewellyn points out, these things do happen. But I don't think that you can predict the psychological effect in advance of any individual consuming an anabolic androgenic steroid. The danger, of course, is there. And I think Mr. Llewellyn has made two or three very good points. I think he is right, for example, in that we are still in a state of real confusion, especially regarding publicity about these drugs, regarding exactly how dangerous they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he is right to point out that the moral, ethical doubts, objections to the use of these drugs have in effect contaminated their assessment as medical agents. There's no doubt in my mind that the ethics and the medicine are hopelessly entangled at this point, in part because one of the things we are watching with Mr. Ashcroft's intervention in this issue is the annexation of the anti-doping campaign in sport by the war on drugs that Richard Nixon launched in 1968.
Sincheska, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. You too. We're speaking with John Hoberman at the University of Texas at Austin and with William Llewellyn, the CEO of Molecular Nutrition. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And before we let you go, Mr. Llewellyn, tell us, do you think that the injection of, certainly the mention of steroid use in the State of the Union address by President Bush and the elevation of these indictments last week by having them announced by the Attorney General of the United States has changed this controversy?
Definitely. I think there's going to be a big change now with the way law enforcement is handling anabolic steroids. You know, something that we looked at in the athletic community for a long time is that although anabolic steroids were legal, it was just understood that it was a low priority for law enforcement. You know, people aren't killing each other over these drugs. People aren't overdosing from them. There's no, you know, tremendous immediate society impact due to people using them. So law enforcement has always kind of put it on the back burner. You know, certainly they will make arrests, but they're not going out of their way. And I'm just hearing, just, you know, within, I think, a week of the speech, talk of DEA becoming much more active, contacting people in the bodybuilding community, trying to, you know, get into the distribution networks of steroids. And I think that that is one of the big changes that you're going to see. You're going to see people, the law is really, you know, enforced, and people are going to get arrested. You know, a lot of people, just, you know, average men and women in the gym that are using drugs are going to get caught up in this. And certainly it's going to be much, much bigger in terms of legal issues, I think, down the road.
William Llewellyn, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
William Llewellyn is CEO of Molecular Nutrition. He writes reference books on anabolic steroids. And we just have a minute or so in this segment of the program, John Hoberman, and we'll come back and answer another question after the break. But I did want to ask you, I mean, we do hear stories of, you know, again, John Matuszak, a professional football player who blamed his death on anabolic steroids, and that there are real dangers here.
Potentially, there are real dangers, especially if people are taking mega doses. Low doses are much less dangerous. I mean, it is a fact that in 1990, the World Health Organization authorized low doses of testosterone for use as an experimental male contraceptive. The dosing issue is one of a number of subtleties that get lost in the discussion of this issue, because the heat goes up so fast when the word drugs is used in the context, again, of a society which is supposedly pursuing a war on drugs.
We'll wrap up our conversation on sports, steroids, and wider uses of steroids throughout our society when we come back from a short break. And we'll also be talking with nature writer Bernd Heinrich about his new book, Winter World, The Ingenuity of Animal Survival. And if you'd like to join our conversation on that subject, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255, or you can email us, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. Today we're wrapping up our conversation on steroids and sports. Our guest is John Hoberman, a professor at the University of Texas at Austin. His book is Testosterone Dreams, Rejuvenation, Aphrodisia, Doping. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Ron, who joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to weigh in a little bit. I was a professional athlete for 15 years as a bicycle racer. Steroid use in cycling is a very low priority, but there's so many other exotic drugs out there that are actually, I've had several friends of mine that died from blood aneurysms, et cetera, using EPO and other red blood cell enhancing products. The other comment I wanted to make is the effect of drug use in sport and what it has on athletes that do not take drugs. I didn't take drugs my whole career and lost several contracts due to the fact that I wasn't willing, quote, to do anything it took, unquote, to help the team win.
John Hoberman, that certainly seems to be a lot of the rationale that some professional athletes in other sports, in addition to bicycle races, use to say, look, other guys are getting this edge. I'm not good enough. If I don't get that edge, I'm going to be out of business here.
This is workplace doping. On the professional cycling circuit in Europe, for example, where the Tour de France and other big races takes place. I've studied this for some years now. This is workplace doping, where these guys, in the last analysis, do not want to take drugs. They do it because the alternative is life as a house painter or something that is much less prestigious, much worse paid than even being a modest member of one of these professional cycling teams.
Or
this
a waiter,
has been poor.
What I'm doing.
Pardon?
He says
as a waiter, which is what I have gone into doing after my career.
Well, there you go. The money factor, the economic pressures to dope are the dirty little secret of the doping debate that it rarely comes to the fore. What we get, the standard story is the soap opera of the athlete who is a sinner, hung out to dry, and the support personnel, the doctors, the sports officials, the politicians who practice sportive nationalism, and some of whom rage at the doping charges directed against athletes of their nationality. The entire support system from the political system on down has largely gotten a free ride up to this point. And the doping debate is going to mature when the over-scapegoating of the athlete who dopes ends and a broader discussion of everybody who benefits from the doping system begins.
Ron, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you very much.
And John Hoberman, we thank you for your time today as well.
Thank you.
John Hoberman is a professor at the University of Texas. Again, his book coming out early next year, Testosterone Dreams. Earlier in the conversation, I misidentified a football player who blamed his death on the use of steroids. It was Lyle Alzado, and I apologize for fans of John Matuzak and Tattoos himself, of course. We're going to be discussing the hibernation of animals in just a moment on Talk of the Nation.